The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here on the line on ESPN 106.7. What a gorgeous day it is here in the Auburn Opelika area. Saturday was beautiful. Yesterday was beautiful. Today is as well. I don't know what we did to make Mother Nature happy, but let's keep doing it because it is absolutely perfect outside. And I don't know if you would describe it as perfect inside this studio, but I think it's pretty darn close. You've got us for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. Appreciate you being with us on this Monday, May 4th. 2026. And no, I will not be making a Star Wars Day, May the 4th crap. I don't like it. Mainly because I just don't like the movies. If you celebrate it, cool. Good for you. It ain't gonna be me. It was never a franchise that I got behind, Christian. Never was. Happy Monday to you. Happy Monday, the 4th of May.
Yeah, there we go.
2026.
Happy Series Victory Monday?
Yeah.
I think that's a good way of going about it. For the
times three.
Fifth straight time. I mean, my goodness.
Times three for Auburn University, Auburn High, Lee Scott.
Yeah.
So it's a thrice victory Monday.
There we go. Boom. And most importantly, yes, no May the 4th be with you jokes.
Because, again, if you celebrate it and you like Star Wars, cool. Is your dad a Star Wars fan?
Oh, big time.
I can see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, not hating on it by any means. It's just not a franchise that I ever got into. It's like you with the superhero movies. It's just one you never got into, you know?
Yeah, same way.
It is what it is.
Oh, man, but what a happy day it is here to be able to join you. We appreciate everybody for being here with us. Auburn baseball does it again. Fifth straight series win in the SEC. League leading, and we'll talk all about it. We're going to dive into, obviously, again, the deep dive about each of the three games tomorrow, but just looking at it, recapping it, you talk about sweeping a doubleheader, and my goodness, the two different ways of winning a baseball game. The law of baseball averages showed up in that one, and then even more showed up in game three, just the way that the bats were not really there for anybody for a majority of that contest, and how you were one swing away from a possible sweep. You were also, honestly, one swing away from losing the series as well.
Yeah.
And so we'll be able to talk all about that, but how the numbers now that for quite some time were the only true things holding Auburn back from being legitimate national seeds. Well, now all of those numbers have begun favoring Auburn, and rightfully so. We'll talk about the RPI. We'll talk about the strength of schedule. We'll talk about the non-conference strength of schedule and dive into a little bit more of these numbers that kind of go by the wayside for a lot of the people, a lot of the baseball viewers that just look at the records and how, my goodness, we talk about it in football all the time, how not every record is equal. We'll be able to tell you why Auburn's is so, so impressive and how it needs to be, unfortunately, even more so impressive over the next couple of weekends as well. We'll also talk a little bit of football in here as well, as we have percentages on returning snaps and returning production offensively, defensively, and then just overall as a team. We have Auburn in there, and as you can imagine, they're pretty far down there in terms of all of college football, all of the SEC as well. Is that a little bit concerning, or is that something that you feel like brings a little bit more excitement in terms of change? And although change is sometimes scary, sometimes it's what you need. And so we'll be able to talk about that. look at the SEC teams that are bringing back the most production and just the teams in college football that are bringing back the most production. If we expect them to be some of the top teams in college football this year, we also have some commits news, some transfer portal news in there as well. Before we dive into the toughest schedules in the SEC and how it's time, Jacob. It's time for the conversations of Auburn with a relatively favorable schedule in the SEC.
What could go wrong?
What could go right?
Yes.
And just what could go wrong? And thankfully, nothing could go wrong
whatsoever.
Happy Monday. We appreciate everybody for being here with us.
Yeah, we have a full show, as he said. So if you want to be a part of today's show, we'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390 is the phone line number if you'd like to be a part of the show. 334-321-1390. Anything we're talking about, you can call in and give your thoughts, your opinion, agree, disagree, whatever the case may be. Or you can always shoot us a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. And just got a text from the On the Line text box. Never mind. I'm not going to read that on air, but it's funny. It's a joke about May the 4th and folks who celebrate it. Yeah, that one.
We can pass the phone.
Yeah, that one will stay personal. Here we go. It's the top notification. You can hear, you can read it. But, yeah, 334-784-1067. The person that sent it, you know who you are. That got a chuckle out of me. But, yes, we start with Auburn baseball. I think that's funny. We start with Auburn baseball.
How dare you?
I know. Who, as you said, the league-leading fifth series win in a row.
Whew.
And you hear that, and you're like, huh, that's pretty impressive. That's a pretty big deal. But when you dive into what that truly means and who it has been against, you've got to tip the cap to what Auburn has done. And I want to remind people, this was coming off of a four-game losing streak, being swept by Alabama and getting blasted and run-ruled against Georgia Tech in Atlanta. The Tigers won every series in April and have started May the exact same way.
And even further back beyond that, yes, you run-ruled South Alabama, but then you lost the series to Texas as well.
Yep.
And so at that point, cue any kids in the car, which hopefully not. It's a school day, dang it. They were where they need to be, but Auburn had lost six of their last seven before this stretch. And man, we talked all about it, and Butch Thompson did as well, about how he wished his team would have handled more adversity, or rather had more adversity in the non-conference, just because of, man, he knows what the grind and what this SEC gauntlet looks like year after year. And he knows what was upcoming for this Auburn team and how it was probably the toughest stretch, if not the toughest stretch in college baseball. And you've gone already to see even more of, even just with two series left, you feel like it's the toughest in all of college baseball. But you talked about wishing that they had more adversity because he didn't know how this team was going to respond. And you mentioned it, getting swept at Alabama and then getting run ruled in Atlanta. You were at the point of, okay, you come back home and you feel like you have to win this series. By no means did we want to put everything on April 2nd, April 3rd, and April 4th. But you got to that point, and even more so, after winning 10-2 in Game 1 against Arkansas, you lost Game 2 3-2, we sat there on Saturday, April 4th, and said, man, you can't lose this series. There's a lot on Game 3 right here. Auburn wins it 8-3, and gets run-ruled by Jacksonville State. And it got to the point of, okay, does that wipe away a lot of the confidence after winning a series against Arkansas? They then host Kentucky and are able to bring the bats back to life. And you feel like, my goodness, was that the spark? Was that the start of a really, really good offensive showing throughout the entire month of April? They win at 12-5 in Game 1. They lose 5-4 in Game 2, but then run-rule Kentucky in seven innings in Game 3. They continue that with a run-rule over Alabama State. Then they go to Gainesville, and you drop Game 1, and it's okay. You know, there was desperation after a really bad midweek. This Florida team at home needed to come out and respond. Auburn, you just find, I need to find a way to get one of the next two. Well, they got Game 2, 5-3. And then with a big-time ninth inning, again, that was Auburn's A-day, which we got to see a lot of inside Jordan Hare Stadium, and that was still a really cool moment of having that game broadcasted on the Jumbotrons and seeing Jordan Hare cheer in that ninth inning.
We got to walk in when the bub homer happened. We didn't
see it. We walked in and saw the place losing its mind, and it was like, okay, you had players run out of the tunnel for the first time. And then we heard over, a conversation with a couple of older gentlemen said, bub just went deep. And it was like, wait, really? Yeah. And he was like,
here we go.
And then they showed it again. And that's then sparked that ninth inning. And that was the return of Bub Terrell, which was really, really cool to see. You then go and run rule Samford. You win the series against Oklahoma. And then you win the series at Texas A&M, which we talked about the Florida series being arguably the biggest of the season. It probably was up to that time, but I think it's safe to say you just won the biggest series of the season, and unfortunate that next weekend and the next weekend may be the exact same conversation, but Auburn sweeps the doubleheader on Saturday. They fall on Sunday, and my goodness, we'll talk a little bit more about that and how it's not fair to have the mindset that we kind of have, but after you've already taken care of business, folks, Sunday was just the getaway day.
Oh, yeah.
We talk all about it, and it's hard not to have that mindset. And would it have been so nice to have swept Texas A&M, and you can look at it and get an extra win in Southeastern Conference play? Yes, but the way that both of those teams played on Sunday, granted, again, fantastic work by both arms. The changeups were filthy afternoon, yet the approach at the plate didn't necessarily help that. But Auburn already did what they needed to do. They run rule Texas A&M in game one of the doubleheader, only play seven innings, and at that point you're like, oh gosh, this is about to be a 2-1 game in the nightcap.
All of our runs. Yep.
Save a couple runs, Auburn. Well, it got a little dicey, but Auburn responds yet again. Chase Frelick has an absolutely incredible series, and that doubleheader, I mean, even more so. And Auburn's bats, as the temperatures continue to do, they get hot, man. The long ball is starting to work in favor of the Auburn Tigers. They win the doubleheader, they win the series, and they are in a very, very good spot. Come here today on May 4th.
More importantly, Auburn's rubber match win streak stays alive because they didn't have to put it up. They had won and still have technically four straight rubber games.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous, man.
The only complaint on that side of things, which I guess continues that complaint, if it is a complaint, which is not even fair to use that as the true word for it, but it shows that you haven't gotten the sweep, which other teams have, which goes to show you why sometimes the SEC records look a little bit different. That being said, if that is your biggest quote-unquote complaint of, man, it's really unfortunate and really frustrating that Auburn just keeps winning the series.
Yeah.
Feels like you're in a pretty good spot.
No, I mean, this weekend was just so darn impressive from so many different avenues. And here we are again in a three-game set where Auburn's pitching did its job and then some.
Yeah.
5-4-4. That's the run totals you gave up to a Texas A&M team who can score in an absolute hurry.
And you saw it at times, but Auburn did their darndest and did a pretty dang good job at minimizing all of that damage.
And dancing out of trouble and A, not getting in trouble very often, but B, finding a way to dance out of it. But you can't overlook the idea that the offense did what it needed. 18 runs is an anomaly, right? But you scored 5 runs in game 2. And guess what? Look at some of the other games that you have lost this year by not scoring that many, right? The Oklahoma game where you lose 2-1. The first game against Florida where you only score 3. The game against Kentucky where you lost 5-4, right? The game against Arkansas where you only scored 2. The Alabama series where you scored 1, 2, and 1, right? Those series, it was like, man, the offense is like, poke it with a stick. Please do something. And they have. And while you are still seeing heavy hitting at the top, you're still seeing consistency 1 through 9 for the most part. Okay, I honestly, you said it. I went into this mentality Saturday night of, I genuinely don't care what happens on Sunday. Like, would the sweep be awesome? Yes. Would we celebrate it? Yes. But the fact that Auburn lost yesterday and watching and listening and watching that game, it truly was, yeah, we're good. Like, let's just, A&M is desperate. We've won the series. Let's just swing away and see what happens. And, of course, A&M was like, cool, break a ball in the dirt. Break them all in the dirt. Yeah. And the offense has done its job. And seeing so many guys get involved, Bingaman and the McCranes and Bob and EG, like seeing all these guys step up when their name is called. And it's not the same guy every game. It's not the same guy every weekend. But that is something that Auburn is going to rely on. How about Cade Ballou coming in and having a good game this weekend? Like just things like that that are finally, as we enter the most crucial month of the season, the month of May, that coming together, plus your defense still playing solid, that being in the field, and then your pitching has just been the best in the country, I think. All of that now coming together, man, this team has, I mean, the potential's through the roof, man.
It's so nice. The ceiling is the roof. I still need to show you that video of Michael Jordan saying that because it's hilarious. But We talked all about it in the preseason of how, man, when you look up and down this roster, there are 12, 13, maybe even 14 guys that you could implement anywhere in this lineup, and you don't feel like you're losing a step. Yes, if you lose a guy like Eric Guevara or Chase Frelick, yes, that is a very, very big blow.
Rakelick, baby.
But the amount of guys that you have in the lineup, dare I compare it, and it's probably not fair, but two are Atlanta, two my/part-time your Atlanta Braves.
They're my number two.
You lose big guys, but you're still looking at offensive production by so many different guys that can step in. I mean, it's exactly what you're talking about. Cade, who didn't get the start, but came in for Mason McCrane in game one of the doubleheader, game one of the series, after taking one off the elbow. Cade goes 3-for-3. Couple of RBIs, couple of runs in there as well. You're also looking at a guy like Eddie Madrigal, who went 3-for-4. Brandon McCrane hit his first jack of the year. I mean, you're having so many guys step up and play such meaningful minutes, and that goes to show why it's so nice being able to get guys at bats in the non-conference. And I know Eddie was injured, so it didn't play that big of a factor until about SEC play. But being able to have so many different guys play so many different positions, bat in so many different spots, it makes it to where this team is so, so dangerous. And you're now, it doesn't happen very often, and I think that's why it's so exciting when it finally hits, because how many teams do we talk about it, and it's like, man, the potential is there. The potential is right there. You see it on paper, yet how many times do we sit there and go, man, if only it worked out like that. You saw Auburn in the middle part of the SEC play kind of go through that skid, but now you're seeing this team play not only their best baseball, their most confident baseball, not only on the mound but at the plate, and both of those rally off of one another makes it to where going into the top half, then going into the bottom half is fun. You're able to put runs up in the home half if you're at home, or like you did this past weekend, you put runs up in the top half of innings to where, my goodness, the pitchers, before they even go out, are pitching with a lead. Or all of a sudden they get run support in the second, in the third. It makes it to where 0-1, 0-2 is that much easier. It's that much more simple because, okay, I have now six runs to work with. I can throw the fastball a little bit more over the heart of the plate and challenge these hitters and force them to do something other than what would be at worst a solo home run, which you saw a couple of times. But, man, confidence is oozing through this team right now, and I feel like the numbers are slowly, if they haven't been already, some of the under-highlighted numbers are beginning to work their way in Auburn's favor to what is hopefully a national seed come the end of the regular season.
And we'll talk about that, plus answer some of the text in the text box as well. Talking Auburn baseball, if you'd like to be a part of it, give us a call at 334-321-1390. That text box is open as well at 334-784-1067. We're just underway here on the Monday edition of On the Line.
From revolution to rockets, from dusty frontiers to city skylines, these are the moments that shaped America. This is the American Minute presented by Bucks Island. July 4th, 1776. Inside Philadelphia's Pennsylvania State House, 56 men prepared to sign a document unlike any the world had ever seen. A declaration that 13 small colonies would break away from the most powerful empire on earth. If they failed, it would be treason, punishable by death. John Hancock signed first boldly, then the others followed, farmers, merchants, lawyers. Ordinary men risking everything. Their words, radical for the time, that all men are created equal. Now, 2.5 centuries later, that idea still echoes. One defining moment that shaped the country we call home. This American Minute is presented by Bucks Island, family-owned and operated, serving boaters since 1948. Online at bucksisland.com.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
We are back here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, talking some Auburn baseball. And before we dive into some of the numbers here, just about where Auburn stands nationally, right, because you would hope that winning 5 straight SEC series would kind of boost everything, and don't worry, it has. A couple of texts that we got in the On the Line text box, which you can hit up as well, 334-784-1067. It says, the one person says, I love Bub, but my goodness, it's either home run, which we like, or a strikeout with Bub Terrell as of late. And
welcome to today's day and age of baseball.
Baseball. I mean, here's the thing. Bub is hitting .299 on the season. Okay, his OPS is .945, which is still very solid. He has scored 35 runs, 50 hits. He has 21 extra base hits, 11 of those being homers, 31 RBIs, slugging .557. I don't have his exact SEC numbers, but SEC numbers have not been great. Okay, they just haven't. He has not had a great SEC slate. But it seems like even when he's 0-2, 0-3, he has come up with that hit late that Auburn has needed. He had one this weekend in Aggieland. Yeah. He had the one, as we were talking about, a couple of weekends ago that we watched or, I guess, heard about during A-Day. So I understand. But Bub, just being the athlete that he is, right, he's a good defensive player. He can hit it a mile. You just got to take, and you say this all the time, you just got to take the good with the bad with a guy like him. And if nothing else, he's a fun guy to be around. He's a leader on this team. And weirdly enough, he's one of the more experienced guys on the team, even though he's extremely young, which is what the next texter talks about.
Yeah, I mean, again, you see the energy that he brings and the lift that he gives to his guys. And we obviously overanalyze every single thing about Auburn, A, because it's our job, but B, even just as fans, you watch every game. Yeah, you see the 0-3 with 3 strikeouts or whatever the case may be, but yeah, he comes up and we feel like every single time in clutch situations, and got it done again yesterday, hit the ground ball that would have gone up the middle and probably scored 2. You go back and wish that it would have, but off the pitcher, one run scores, and you feel like that's just somebody that steps up in those clutch situations. And if you didn't overanalyze and you didn't watch every single Auburn game, and I told you the Bub's hitting .299 or whatever, was it .290 or .299?
.299, yeah. On the year.
Right, but even if it was, okay, I didn't watch a single game, but I told you that Bub hit .299, okay, I'd probably take that, considering the OPS and the slugging percentage and the ability to hit for extra bases. And again, just one of those energy guys that, regardless of where you put in the lineup, you feel like he needs to be in there, A, because of his clutch ability, but yeah, you mentioned it, his leadership has been there, done that, and just the true threat of what he brings to the plate every single time he steps into the batter's box. We'll get into some of the text messages here in just a minute, but do want to dive into a little bit of the overall numbers and how they, my goodness, are truly beginning to favor this Auburn team even more than they have in the past. Auburn now has the number one strength of schedule, and I don't think that that is overly surprising, but the fact that you're already at that point, and folks, I promise it's not going to go down. Auburn's going to finish first or second, and I promise you it's not going to be second in terms of strength of schedule, and the fact that you're sitting at 32-14 right now is overly impressive. Auburn, their non-conference RPI, again, the teams that you played preseason, the teams that you played before the true season got started, is third. You are third. Jeez. In non-conference RPI, which that has now taken a little bit more of, it's taken a little bit more seriously. It's taken more than just with a grain of salt of, okay, well, yeah, but you look at some of these other teams and Not, by no means is this bad, but you look at UCLA's non-conference RPI of 18th, Georgia Tech's of 31st, A&M's of 17th, Florida's of 25th, Kansas, who's a top 15 team after winning 9 in a row, 45th. Things like that are impressive, yes. Then you go look again at Auburn with the number 3 non-conference RPI. Their non-conference strength of schedule is 17th. That is the first in the top 10 behind Florida State at 32nd. Georgia Tech is the 174th non-conference strength of schedule. UCLA's is 56th. North Carolina's is 97th. A&M's is 178th. Mississippi State's 135th. We talk a lot about it in terms of college basketball, of how it's not all about the teams that you beat, but it's the teams that you play. Yes, it kind of works like that for college baseball, but it also helps when you beat a lot of those teams, and the fact that Auburn was able to get one against Georgia Tech. They were able to play Florida State early on and beat them. They were able to play teams like Louisville and beat them early on is very, very beneficial to these numbers that are beginning to get looked at a whole lot more. This is also something that pays a little bit more, has a little bit more weight to it in terms of college basketball. But Auburn is the only team in the top 8. There's 2 in the top 10. Mississippi State's in there as well, to not have a quad 3 or a quad 4 loss,
which is a big deal.
It's a very big deal. Yes, it goes a little bit more with weight in terms of college basketball. Of man, you can't lose quad 3 or quad 4 games. But the fact that Auburn is A, undefeated, but B, only 6-0 in quad 3, 8-0 in quad 4. You're looking at a couple of these other teams that are 15-1 in just quad 4 games alone. Mm-hmm. Auburn is 1-1, or 11-11 rather, apologies, in quad 1. They're 7-3 in quad 2 games. It shows that the numbers are favoring the Auburn Tigers a lot more than they have recently in terms of ones that hold a little bit more weight. Makes it to where, man, that series win at Texas A&M and now these two upcoming series are very, very beneficial in what Auburn is hoping to do. A lot of them are listed as a top 4 national seed for the Auburn Tigers.
Someone in the text box says, one good thing about this team is most of them have the chance to be back next year. Auburn does not lose much from this roster. That, of course, depending on, you know, MLB and stuff like that. But that texter always says, I think A&M is clearly better than Mississippi State and Georgia. Says 3-3 might be a floor for the remaining 6 conference games. I'll give you that they're better than Mississippi State. I don't think I'm ready to go there yet with Georgia, who is about to be the SEC regular season champ. Pitching for Georgia is not great. Defense is solid. Offense is obviously solid, but I don't know, man. That Texas A&M team is really good. I don't think I'm ready to say they're better than Georgia, though.
Georgia will be Auburn's arguable biggest test, but Auburn's going to be biggest, or Auburn's going to be Georgia's biggest test as well.
No doubt. We'll continue talking a little bit of baseball, answer a couple of more texts when we come back. Then we flip to talking some college football here on ESPN 106.7.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into the Monday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us. And putting a bow on the baseball conversation with a couple of more text messages, couple of more questions, and again, a couple of more comments from us before we flip into some football action. And yeah, again, I think this texter again said, I think A&M is clearly better than Mississippi State and Georgia. I do think they're better than State. I'm just not ready to go as far to say they're better than Georgia. Auburn just beat a top 5 team in the SEC this weekend. I think that needs to be clearly stated. When you look at the latest SEC baseball standings, Georgia at the top, Texas and Texas A&M both tied for second. Auburn and Mississippi State technically tied in that third spot. Okay. Auburn just beat Texas A&M. You did lose to Texas. You've got Mississippi State this weekend, and you've got Georgia in the finale. And so, regardless of how you would rank them based on the eye test, Auburn just got themselves a very, very nice win. They say 3-3 might be the floor for the remaining 6 games in SEC play that Auburn has, and that parlays into what Right-hand salute. Good afternoon, Mr. President. He says, what do you guys think is the magic number for more SEC wins to get a national seed, 2 or 3?
For Auburn to get a national, or just, I mean, I'm guessing this.
Auburn, yeah, yeah.
I think 16 puts you in a legitimate conversation. 16, you may need a little bit of help in terms of the numbers that we just talked about. I think 17 locks it up without a question. So I think, again, that floor of 3 and 3 puts you easily in terms, and especially if that comes with a one win against Mississippi State and then you win the series against Georgia, I think that helps. I do think 3 and 3 could look different if you swept Mississippi State but then got swept at home against Georgia. That might hurt you a little bit.
Just because a sweep, just it right. puts a bad taste in people's mouths.
Right.
It does.
But 3 and 3, if that comes by, quote, doing your job, taking one on the road, winning the series at home, then I think that would put you at your 17 spot, that I think there's not a question that you're a national seed.
I think there's a world where you could just get one win in each of the next two series and be just fine.
Yeah, again, I think 16 could and probably should get you in that conversation.
But if you want to be stress-free on selection day.
Correct.
Yeah, I agree with that.
If your biggest stress on selection day is what national seed are we going to be,
yeah,
get 17.
Yeah. Somebody else also asked, is John Cohen still on the baseball committee? And if so, can he give Auburn a push like some teams get for basketball when they have an athletic director on the committee?
I know he was in 19, and it started the four-year term. I believe that term ended in 2023.
I believe that's right.
I don't know if he got
put back on it. I don't think he did. If that's incorrect and somebody has a further, I guess, confirmation on that. But I don't think he is right now. So, but athletic directors are not supposed to push for their teams. They're supposed to step out
of the
room.
They're not supposed to. They don't.
Yeah, they step out of the room, and they don't have any influence.
No.
At all. That's why Notre Dame's athletic director has been a part of the college football playoff committee. They don't have an influence.
No, not at all. So, and they don't try to either. They don't try.
No, they don't. So enough baseball for now. We will continue talking baseball as the week goes
on.
Sure?
I mean, I can keep going.
I mean, we can talk about the MLB leading Braves if you would like to.
I'd be down to do that. Sweeping Colorado.
I mean, it's a big deal. Colorado.
Hey, not every team can do it.
My team can't. My team can't do nothing, man.
Hey, they scored one run yesterday. They lost in 10, but they did score. And Roman Anthony did have one hit.
Yeah, he did.
Not that that's important.
Not that we care about that at all. No, we'll talk more baseball tomorrow as we do on every Tuesday show. Dive into these three games. Talk about what Auburn has in a midweek tomorrow in Birmingham against a very good UAB team. Again, Auburn in the middle of 8 straight games on the road away from Plainsman Park. More on that tomorrow. We're getting our weekly baseball interview set up. Either going to have an assistant coach or a player. So keep that in mind. And then believe that we will have the head man going into the Georgia series. So
that'd be awesome.
Yeah, very cool stuff. And again, shout out to George Nunnally, the baseball SID, for helping us out with that all season long. But let's transition into a little bit of college football talk, because you found an article, CBS Sports puts this out, and it's something that comes around every single year, and it does have validity, okay? It's not everything, but it does have some validity. It's returning snap percentages for every team in college football, meaning what percentage of players on your roster, or basically the players on your roster, how many snaps did they play a year ago for your team? Mm-hmm. It's returning production is what it is. And in today's era of college football, right, this is a number that has dropped across the board pretty significantly because of the transfer portal. Because guys get out and go and leave and go wherever they want to go, and it's a year-by-year thing. And so the industry average has dropped, again, I would be willing to bet by probably a good 10 percentage points, if not more.
I'd be willing to probably go even further than that, yeah.
But you look across the SEC in particular, and some Auburn fan that comes across this article and is scrolling, they might have a little fear. They might be scared, just a little bit spooked, if you will, about Auburn being second to last on the list. Auburn ranked 15th in returning production in the Southeastern Conference. But all you got to do is use your noggin for about 10 seconds and go, oh, yeah, new coach, new team, new roster, new players. And you're like, okay, I think we're okay, right? So how much, just on the forefront of this, Christian, how much stock in 2026 do you put in to returning production for a power conference college football team?
Sorry, doing research. In 2015, Ohio State was one of the lowest teams, if not the lowest team. I know they were in the Big Ten. They may be in college football. But they were the least punished team in terms of bringing guys back, and that was at 75% that they returned. Notre Dame this year is the leading country at 66%.
Well, there you go.
So the leader has lost almost 10% of their production since a decade ago.
Man, I'm good. Man.
Sorry, your question?
While you were using the unnamed search engine, thank you for that, by the way. How much stock, before we dive into the actual numbers here and what we think about it in terms of Auburn and other teams in the SEC, how much stock are you putting in returning production in the year 2026 in college football? Basketball, baseball, all different sports, right? We talk about basketball and how big that is because each individual player means so much more,
right?
But in 2026 for college football, how much stock are you putting into returning production?
Unfortunately, I feel like it's an unanswerable question because I think so much of it determines the coach and the team. When you look at Georgia, they're, again, we're going to talk about some of these numbers, they're fifth in returning production, and they don't use the transfer portal a lot. A lot of what they get is from the high school rankings and from being able to not only recruit but develop and keep guys. And so on that forefront, not as much, but then you also mentioned it. Okay, on the Auburn side of things, you're going to imagine on this website, you're going to scroll for quite some time, and you are, before you find this Auburn team. I think that the more you look at it and the more that these numbers kind of back it up, I think that defensively it's much more important than offensively. I think your ability to bring back your defensive guys, and again, I think a lot of this, and just looking at the top 10, the top 15 in terms of this article, shows the amount of defensive snaps that are returning, because I think that offensive production can come from a lot, and obviously the rent a QB, the we need a claim for that. Like the car brand that says not, you know, can't say it, but rent a QB, you know.
Rent a QB. It's just a...
We'll throw you touchdowns.
Yeah.
There we go. Boom.
Got it.
But obviously that plays a major factor in it, but the skill guys are obviously the ones that you hear their name, but I think defensively it is very, very important, and that is not where Auburn ranks in terms of defense. They brought back a lot of their guys, but I would put more stock in the defensive returnings than offensive returnings.
Just because of cohesion?
In terms of that, in terms of just how the game has changed, and you're at the point of, man, it used to be, okay, if these offenses can just get that one more score, they're going to win. But now you're at the point of, man, if that defense can just get that one stop, I think there's a little bit more value kind of working its way back into what needs to be on the defensive side of the football.
Well, you said it. I mean, how many plug-and-play quarterbacks do you see nowadays?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it is. Look at...
And not only that, but now running backs, receivers...
Yeah,
even just
one or two year rentals.
Yeah,
I mean that's just what they are. Yeah, I mean look at LSU, look at Indiana, the national champs.
And even just from that standpoint, look at what the market value is for those guys versus a star middle linebacker or a star safety. Receivers and top end quarterbacks are three, if not four times the going rate of what a very good, if not a star corner or safety is going to be, which I think shows obviously the necessity for offensive players, but I don't think that you're at the point of, okay, we have to keep this guy rather than on the defensive side of things, just because there's not that there's not as many guys, but I think there is more value working its way back into college football and getting stops than there are and getting scores.
Well, and in a way, and this sounds, it's going to sound ugly when I say it, and I don't mean it to be, but it seems like college football teams have come to the assumption or the realization that, man, there's a lot of dudes who can catch the football.
Sure.
There's a lot of dudes who can take a handoff from a quarterback. You know what I mean? Like, in terms of lockdown corners, you don't have a ton of those. A guy that can roam and play nickel or even drop back as a free safety, you don't have a lot of those. A guy that can put his hand in the dirt and run somebody over, you just don't have a lot of those. And I'll give the obvious answer, too, of old school football. You bring back any sort of production on your offensive line, and you are just light years ahead of most teams in power conference football right now. And so it's so weird, though, because... What?
So I think Auburn is the perfect example of that.
Exactly. Of
the unfortunate reality of, man, if you have a great offense but a terrible defense, you're going to have a chance to win, but you're going to be sitting there frustrated as all you know what for the one day that your offense doesn't show up. There's never been a question about Auburn's defense showing up, which has frustratingly made it to where you're just so close in every single one of these games.
I haven't worried about Auburn's defense in like 8 years.
Exactly.
Literally. Now, I mean, when's the last Auburn team where we were like, man, this defense sucks?
Yeah.
Like, it's been a while, okay? But isn't it weird that we're at that point where it's like, man, if you bring back your starting corner, your second team All-SEC corner, you are super pumped, you're excited, you feel good about it, and then you just go get a starting transfer wide receiver, yet... that wide receiver, the position that anybody can do it, there's a ton of athletic dudes who can jump out of the stadium and catch a 50-50 ball. His value is, like you said, triple what the starting corner is.
Yeah.
Or starting linebacker or starting edge. Like, that's just wild to me because I agree with you. I think having a lot of returning production defensively over time is more beneficial. But then I look at the offensive line, too, where – and in Auburn's situation, you've had returning offensive lines. You just had returning bad offensive lines, and that doesn't get you very far either. A little bit ahead of the curve, but not by much. And the reason we're having this conversation, we'll kind of dive into this, maybe go ahead and take a break and dive into it. Returning production numbers in the SEC, across college football, yes, but in the SEC, Auburn is second to last. And that is because you have a new coach with a new staff and a brand new roster. Most of that being on the offensive side of the football. How exciting is that? How scary is that? And what does that mean for you winning football games? We'll look at the entire list of the SEC, why Auburn is second to last, and what that means for the upcoming season. We'll look at that and wrap up hour number one right after this here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
So during the break, I learned how to read properly. I learned how to,
You learned how to look at hour number one versus hour number
two. Yeah, I learned how to read a list properly. Auburn, don't worry. No, remember how we always say it could always be worse? It is worse. I have said that Auburn is the second to last team in the SEC for football in returning production. Just kidding. Auburn is the last team in the SEC in returning production. My mistake.
Yeah, you got to scroll quite a ways. And Auburn, in terms of 138 teams in FBS college football, Auburn is 115th. In returning production, they are bringing back 11% of their offense, which is ranked 133rd out of 138 teams, and they're bringing back 43% of their defensive snap production, which is 55th. In the country, I do think you prioritize your star guys defensively because of the amount of talent that you were able to bring in. And my goodness, we talk about how young the Auburn baseball team is. The Auburn defense is going to be really young in there as well, which is really, really exciting to try and think about. But yes, only 23 teams are below them in terms of overall returning production, and neither one of them are in the Southeastern Conference. Unless there's something new in App State and Colorado State and Colorado are in those groups, but I don't believe that they are in terms of SEC teams.
No, I don't think so.
But my goodness, you look at, you then scroll all the way back to the top and you look at returning production and why a lot of these teams are projected in the preseason top 25 rankings basically across the board. And a lot of these teams at the very top are in the top five. Notre Dame is listed as the number one overall team in terms of returning snaps. They're bringing back 65 or 66% of their total snap production, 57% offensively, which ranks for 17th. In offensive rankings, they're bringing back 73% of their defensive snaps, which goes to show you a pretty good Notre Dame defense with is now going to be basically trying to give the football back to C.J. Carr, who's looking to make a big-time jump for Marcus Freeman. Maryland and BYU are second and third. Virginia Tech, weirdly enough, is fourth, even with James Franklin making the trip there. And so I think that just shows the excitement of what James Franklin is bringing in terms of the Hokies, but won't spend too much time on that side of things. Georgia is fifth. They're bringing back 58% of their offensive production. They're bringing back 65% of their defensive production, which you mentioned the question about teams of the importance of bringing back numbers. I think a team like Georgia needs to be up there in the top 10 in a lot of these categories. You have USC and Ohio State just outside the top 10. Oklahoma in there at 13. Texas in there at 15. Tennessee at 18th. And so a lot of these teams are bringing back a whole lot of their production from last year, going and getting those Band-Aids for their quarterback spots, their running back spots, their receiver spots. But you go and you look through this article about the defensive snaps. I mean, second, third, fourth, ninth, fifth, seventh, first, 24th, 13th, 14th. There's a lot of production in terms of the defensive rankings that these teams are trying to bring back and will be bringing back to the 2026 season.
It's a big deal, man. I mean, for a team like Auburn, of course, with a new coach and everything, you don't want to look at this number and it be the only thing you judge the upcoming season on.
Right.
But you just want that number to climb over time because you've said it. I mean, Ohio State and Georgia and teams like that have found a way to where it's like, okay, it's portal season. We need seven guys.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than, wow, we brought in 26 players. You know what I mean?
And it's not even, we need seven guys because they're all leaving for the portal. Most of it's, all right, we need seven guys because three of our receivers are getting drafted in the first or second
round. Yeah. Jeremiah Smith coming back for another year.
Yeah.
Is he number one for you?
Oh, I mean, he's got to be.
There's got to be some
but
phenomenal receivers.
We are. I am very, very interested because I have been forever, for no reason whatsoever, but also just in terms of college football, very, very high on Carnell Tate, as he would be the wide receiver one just about anywhere other than Ohio State. After he got drafted, what is Jeremiah Smith going to look like without that major second option? Because you couldn't throw the overhead safety. You couldn't just sit there and leak the outside linebacker on out routes. It's going to be very interesting to see and what that team will look like.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at Jeremiah Smith, Malachi Toney, who is back for another year at Miami.
Man, I talked about him in week zero last year.
Yeah. Of course, Cam Coleman at Texas. He's already getting top 10 love.
Really?
I know. Hard to believe. Charlie Becker and or Nick Marsh at Indiana are going to be deadly. Deuce Robinson at Florida State. Mario Craver at Texas A&M. Don't forget him. So there's a lot. And Ryan Coleman Williams at Alabama is up there too. So, Bryant Wesco at Clemson. I forgot about him.
Mm. Yeah, Clemson's bad.
No. The ACC is bad. And because they're
the
in it.
He's listening.
Yeah, he's not. And because it's by association. If you're in the ACC, I just think you're terrible because your conference is terrible.
Boom.
Sorry. What a way to end hour number one. I wouldn't want to do it any other way. Well, stick around. We continue talking college football and toughest SEC schedules. You'll never believe where Auburn is. I mean it.
The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what Sports Talk Radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 1067. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 1067, Auburn, Opelika, sports leader. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 1067. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on this beautiful Monday afternoon here in the Auburn and Opelika area. If, and only if, you missed hour number one of today's show, you can always go back and listen to the podcast version of it on our station website at ESPNAU.com. In our podcast center, in hour number one, we talked a lot of Auburn baseball as the Tigers do it again. Got another SEC series win, their fifth in a row. That is the best in the Southeastern Conference. We talked about that and how Auburn was able to get it done against Texas A&M, plus why the numbers are finally starting to support what the Tigers have been up to, and we looked at the latest SEC standings. Before we talked a little college football and returning production numbers across the SEC and how Auburn is dead last in the conference, but it's not as bad as you think. All of that was in hour number one of today's show. Again, if you missed it, check it out on our station website in the podcast center at ESPNAU.com.
Here in hour number two, we continue the football conversation by transitioning our focus from the returning production to what that's going to look like on the field, talking about the toughest schedules in the SEC, and Auburn ranks towards the bottom. And if you listen to hour number one, and Jacob's incorrect reading, you would know exactly where Auburn ranks in terms of the SEC. But do we agree? Do we disagree? And we'll take a look throughout all of the SEC and spend some time looking at the top five and why Auburn has made those teams the top five toughest schedules, because they have to play against this Auburn Tiger team, and that's the reason why. We'll talk about that. We'll also have Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network joining us, as he does every single Monday at 3:30, and a little bit of a different direction coming up in between those two segments about a little bit of a country concert, and not one that we are attending here soon, but one that has gone on at a couple other places around the SEC and the benefits that those teams are receiving in terms of NIL. And so what could that look like for Auburn? What, if you had a dream, what would that look like for the Auburn Tigers? We'll talk about that and all of that here in hour number two.
Yeah, if you want to be a part of the show for the next 30 minutes, now is the time to do so. You can give us a call on the phone lines, 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. Your thoughts on anything going on in the sports world. If you want to talk college football, college baseball, want to talk about Florida signing another 6'9 power forward from Slovenia today in college basketball, you can call in about that.
What, 40% from three?
Like 38. Average 16-6-3 in Slovenia.
Heck yeah.
Yeah. 22 years old, by the way. Could be a college graduate. So if you want to talk about that, we wouldn't like to, but we will. or anything else on your mind in the sports world. Again, 334-321-1390. Or the text box is open, as it always is, 334-784-1067.
It's time.
Fans aren't going to believe it.
No.
They're going to think we're making it up. And maybe this article is.
I was going to say, for the sake of conversation, for better or for worse, this is coming from collegefootballnews.com. So,
what did they base this off of? Their opinion or the numbers? Based on our...
It says overall improving coaching changes, talent through the portal, and overall talents expected.
Here's our early look of the SEC schedules based on their own spring rankings of the 138 college football team.
Again.
So they used their opinion to make another opinion and gave their opinion. I mean, that's journalism. That's what that is. I like it, though. I support it. Because, again, Auburn fans will never believe where Auburn football ranks in strength of schedule, toughest schedules in the SEC. They'll never believe it. They'll think we're lying.
I was trying to find supporting evidence and was like, why is nothing pulling up? I had 2016 typed up instead of 2026. That'll do it.
I mean, you can look at the 2016 schedule if you really want to.
I could, very, very, very much so.
I don't think I want to go back and talk about the 2016 Auburn Tigers. I think I'm good.
No. Well?
No. I think I'm good.
No.
No, that was...
17, yes.
17, yes.
16, not so
16
much.
Was 8-5, where
We should want to go back and talk about that.
Yeah, it's one of the best seasons Auburn's had in the last decade. I believe that was the, if I'm not mistaken, was that the three quarterback rotation game against Clemson to open up the season?
Oh, gosh. Was that the one we lost 10-3?
No, this was the 1913 game. Maybe I'm thinking of something
that was different. That was in Clemson. That was in Tiger Stadium then.
Let me pull up the individual stats here. No, that was Sean White, and then Jeremy Johnson came in. That was the Sean. Okay. No, maybe that was the 2015 game then.
Because 15, we were here and then went to Clemson. That was the, gosh, yeah.
The quarterback rotation. Drive.
It was disgusting.
No, 2016 was okay. We lost that one 19-13. That one was not fun.
Oh, that was, weren't we up 6-0? We kicked two field goals early on.
We were up
on.
3-0. Clemson scored to make it 7-3. Clemson then kicked a field goal to go up 10-3. Clemson then kicked another field goal to go up 13-3. Okay, Auburn then kicked a field goal in the fourth quarter to be down 13-6. Auburn then gave up a touchdown. That's when the PAT was no good. And then Kerryon Johnson had a rushing touchdown with 3 minutes to go, and that's all Auburn could do. I remember that game. Then you blew out Arkansas State. You let Texas A&M come in and beat you 29-16. Oh, gosh. I remember that was the LSU game where they didn't get the snap off. That was the 18-13 victory in Jordan-Hare in late September where LSU didn't get the snap off inside the red zone.
I was not very happy that day because I couldn't watch it. We had prom that day.
Gross.
So we were taking pictures, and I was like, we won. Cool. And then I went back home, and I got home and realized.
Is that right? Was that the 2016 one? I think so, because it was in Auburn.
If that's the case, holy cow, that was homecoming then.
Yeah, that would have been homecoming in the fall. Yeah, that's when Auburn, after losing that Texas A&M game, they went 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 wins in a row. LSU, Louisiana Monroe, Mississippi State, Arkansas, Ole Miss, Vanderbilt. That was the 13-7 loss against Georgia in Athens.
Oh, gosh.
And then the Iron Bowl in Tuscaloosa that you lost 30-12. And then...
Is that the Georgia game? Hold on. 13-7? Is that what you said?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We threw a pick six the first or the second play coming out of the halftime break. Did we not?
I believe that's correct.
Sean White. And then the final drive, we had...
Yeah.
Yeah,
to open up the third quarter.
Holy cow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're up 7-0 at the half. Yeah.
I don't know Auburn how threw I a
pick.
That.
Auburn threw a pick to start the third quarter with 14 minutes and 37 seconds left on the clock.
Yeah, it was the one touchdown that Georgia scored. And then that was Rodrigo Blankenship. That was the day – he got claimed as like the hero that game.
Yep.
And I remember Auburn got the ball with, 40, 30 seconds or whatever it was, and – went, I believe it was either 3 and out or they basically went 4 and out after getting a first down. But I remember Sean White missed like 3 open receivers over the middle of the field to lose that game.
Then you got you didn't get killed in Tuscaloosa. That score, that game was not good, but the score, I don't know, 30-12. I don't think that sums up that game. But what I remember even more vaguely or distinctly is the Sugar Bowl against a would-be SEC team. Yep. Against Oklahoma on the 2nd of January on that Monday night. Oh, that game was disgusting. 35-19.
That was Baker, wasn't it?
That game sucked. I believe it was. Yes. Yeah. Yes, it was. That was also Joe Mixon, who ran for 101 yards against Auburn. Actually, he ran for 91, sorry, and two touchdowns.
Felt like a whole lot more.
Auburn had Cam Petway, Kerryon. Oh, God. Sean White went 4-for-10 passing. Jeremy Johnson went 5-for-9 passing. And then, here's a name, John Franklin III went 3-for-7 in that game. Kerryon Johnson was 1-for-1 with a touchdown.
I remember when John Franklin, late in the game, I forgot who we were playing, but it was obviously a blowout, took the zone read to the Auburn sideline and stiff-armed a man at the first down marker and raced his way and then dove into the end zone, and everybody was like, there's our starter. And it was like,
no. Auburn had a 7-0 lead at the end of the first quarter in that bowl game. And Oklahoma scored twice and never looked back. So there you go. There's a trip down memory lane of the 2016 Auburn team that for a moment we thought was actually pretty good. Again, you beat LSU, you beat Mississippi State, you just ran through a top 20 Arkansas team at the time, 56-3. You beat Ole Miss
56-3. Who was the quarterback? That was Sean White? Okay, no. So that wasn't the stove is red hot with Stidham. Remember the jet sweep? Jet sweep handoff to Eli Stove? The stove is red hot.
Yes.
But that was a couple years later.
Austin Allen was the quarterback at Arkansas that year. Auburn just beat the crap out of them, 56-3. Then Auburn went to Oxford and dropped 40 points on Ole Miss. Then you beat Vandy, and then it got ugly down. I mean, that was 8-4 regular season football team.
It was the Eli Stove, 2016.
It was. He went for 90. Yeah, he went for 94 yards in that game.
What a great call.
That was a great call. The 2016 team is not as bad as we think it is. They were 8-4 in the regular season.
And then played Heisman Trophy winner.
I mean, how much money in the past 8 years would an Auburn fan have paid to go 8-4?
And gone to the Sugar Bowl.
And gone to a New Year's Six Bowl. Yeah. Like, a lot, I think. I would be willing to bet that Auburn fans would pay a lot of money for that.
Well, they might have the chance to this year with the second easiest schedule in the Southeastern Conference.
Where do you think that schedule ranked in 2016?
Oh, my gosh.
You hosted A&M, LSU, Arkansas, Vandy. You did have to go to Athens and to Tuscaloosa, but I don't know. Anyway.
Was that 26? Oh, I can't remember. I don't think it was. No, he wasn't there yet. Oh, we're getting a phone call. He's going to answer. I got to ask him in person when he gets to it. But, was it 18 then of the Sean Shiver ghost hold? No luck?
Yeah, no bueno.
Oh, was stalling because I wanted to ask you the question. Was it 18? 16 you said was in Tuscaloosa?
Yes. Was it the number one team, yeah.
Was it 18 when there was the ghost hold called on Sean Shivers?
Yes.
On like the third play of the game, went like 75 yards, and they threw the holding penalty after he was already at midfield.
Yeah, oh, he was gone.
Not that it's... Yeah. Probably would have changed the outcome so much, but
I got a text on the personal line. It says, if memory serves me right, 2016, Sean White hurt his shoulder in the Ole Miss game, and it was garbage after that, and the season went downhill. I believe that is correct.
What was the Ole Miss score of that?
40-29 in Oxford.
I think I was... Dad, if you're listening, I think that was my 16th birthday gift.
You went to Oxford?
I did, because I remember I got a picture with John... Here, I'm like, go to my personal IG account. We've done a lot talking about the Auburn schedule, but...
Look at Auburn's records since 2016. Obviously, you had the 2017 season where you went 10-4.
Look.
Nice. Yeah. Look at young you. You went 10-4, 8-5, 9-4, and you have not sniffed that since. 2016 through 2019, Auburn was doing just fine. Is that Sean White?
It's Sean White after they won in Oxford.
Oh, my gosh. What are you wearing in that photo? Are you wearing khaki shorts and a button-up long sleeve?
That is correct. Yeah.
Wow. Please tell me you had Sperry's on. Yes! 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 I knew it. Yes.
Yeah, I mean.
God. Did you not? I know that game was in October. Did you not die? Well, that was late October. Maybe not.
I don't know.
Still, though, that's a look right there, buddy.
That's a look to describe us in high school.
The 20-teens. Wow. Yeah. Yeah, 2016, Auburn goes 8-5. 2017, Auburn goes 10-4. 2018, Auburn goes 8-5. 2019, 9-4. Since then, 6-5, 6-7, 5-7, 6-7, 5-7, 5-7.
Auburn was just ahead of the 6-7 trend. That's all that was.
God. Auburn has had one winning season since 2019, and that was the COVID season because you only played 11 games.
Let's go.
Heck yeah.
And then you backed it up with the during COVID year when Auburn went to Stark Vegas in the final game of the year that nobody watched. The only highlight from that was the cornerback all up in Seth Williams' face. And Seth was sitting there like, all right, let's go. Yeah. Let's
and
go.
And then just
a go ball and he went up and caught it in the end zone.
Dude,
and
Seth Williams, what a guy. He had some highlight reels during his time here.
That his catch against Kentucky
the was
stiff
just
arm.
Nasty. That was COVID too.
Was it really?
I believe so, because I think the stadium only had like students in it. I'm pretty sure I was there.
The year before that was when we played A&M. We were down 24-14, and Jarrett Stidham led two touchdown drives halfway through the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
The last one to Seth Williams caught in the end zone, that he caught the back half of the football.
Yeah.
Over in the north end zone.
Mm-hmm.
Man,
we didn't know how good we had it with Jarrett Stidham. We really didn't.
Why'd he come here?
I said that the day he committed.
So
I said
happy
that the day
he
committed here.
But...
Because really at that time, Auburn hasn't had a legitimate... Well, I shouldn't say that. That's not fair. But I've said it my whole life. Maybe not my whole life. I've said it for the last 10 or 15 years that Auburn is a place that quarterbacks go to die. Did Jarrett Stidham get any better at Auburn? No. Did Bo Nix get any better at Auburn? No. And other than that, I have this yearly rant. Here we go. Name me a quarterback that got better at Auburn during their careers. If they didn't just show up good, they haven't gotten better. Nick Marshall didn't get better. He was just a freak of an athlete. Cam Newton didn't get better. He just was good. Jarrett Stidham didn't get better. He was just good. Bo Nix was the same way. They were pro quarterbacks that just played here. And then so Stidham is lucky he made it to the NFL, and now he's doing fine. Bo Nix went somewhere to get developed to make the NFL because it wasn't going to happen here. That's all I'm saying, man. New coach, new era. Maybe Alex Golish could be the one to kill that narrative. But, yeah. Wow. I didn't have a deep dive in 2016 on my
all
my
because of a
today.
Mistype on Christian's computer.
Talking,
how else would you rather
talking
have
season,
it?
Man? Talking season. Well, let's take a break.
All of that to say that Auburn has the second easiest schedule in the SEC.
Yeah.
A decade later,
we're
look how far we've come.
2016 vibes, baby. 2016 is back. They went 8-5. This team can go 8-5, and you know what? I would take it. 8-4 in the regular season. We don't count the bowl game.
Yeah, sure. Hammer the over in the
there's
win
not
totals.
There's not an Auburn fan in the country that wouldn't take 8-4 this year. Just a guaranteed 8-4 here. You can have it.
Yeah, you can't pick and choose, but here.
Yeah, you get 8-4. You can't have the possibility of better or worse. And 8-4, take it or leave it. Every Auburn fan in the country would take that. And we'll tell you how it's going to happen because of the second easiest schedule in the SEC right after this. We'll take our first break in the second hour on the most free-for-all Monday hour that we've had in quite some time. We're back right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
We continue on here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. And in true On the Line fashion, we're 25 minutes into the hour and have not talked about what's on the rundown. So, color me shocked.
We just took a trip down memory lane to happy memories.
We thought it was unfortunate, and then it turned out to be better than we thought.
There were some... Bless you.
Oh, sorry.
I went out of nowhere.
Yeah, and I'm not a quiet sneezer. It's just not... It got that from my father.
My mic picked that one up.
Yeah, it did. Sorry.
But no, good memories, bad memories. And we've seen the trend
truly
going around
times.
Of 2026... is the new 2016, so...
Dude, 2016 was one of the last good years on this planet.
Back in my neon shorts and my neon tall
Nike. That was
Nike
for you, that
socks.
Was your pre-driving days, right? You were about a year off from driving?
In 2016?
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, once my birthday hit, I was... In this conversation, I was able to drive.
Yeah, okay.
Legally.
Legally.
I've been driving for quite some time, but...
yeah. Yeah, legally able to drive.
Yeah, and drive myself.
That's right. Wow.
Total random thing as we're just talking about this. Very first day that I turned 16, I told myself I was going to drive to Chick-fil-A. And
no way.
Yeah, but 16-year-old me at the time, not that my directions have gotten a whole lot better, but I typed in the wrong Chick-fil-A, and I drove the one – this was after baseball practice as well. I drove through the heart of, like, the Mall of Georgia traffic in Atlanta, and I had never been more scared.
Oh, my
My
God.
Parents were like, where have you been?
Oh,
and I was
gosh.
Like, I went to go to Chick-fil-A. And, yeah.
You went to the one 45 minutes across
It wasn't
town.
That far, but it was the one, like, there's one – probably 8 minutes on either side, but I took the wrong route. And about halfway there, I realized it, and I was like, you know what? I'm a man now. I can do it. You know how
no.
we complain about everybody in Auburn? I was one of those
people. You were one of those, yeah. No, I had to learn my sense of direction very quickly because when I was learning to drive...
back when the back of the TV was still there and...
Yeah, yeah.
Moccasins worn, walked both ways uphill to school.
Yeah, you know, the cars had crank windows and stuff. Yeah. No, the fun thing that my parents decided to do was we would go to town. You know, we'd go into the store or go to eat or whatever. And then they would say, all right, take us home. And I'd be like, all right, cool. How do I get there? Like, I don't know. You tell me. And it was like, okay, do I go that way? You can. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, you
sure.
can get home
you
going
go.
And to be fair, I lived out in the country, so yes, there were like five different, I mean,
sure.
the same thing anywhere. There are five different ways to get home. One is quicker than the other, and they all kind of rank in their differences, but that's how I learned to get around, was just being put behind the wheel, and it's like, all right, get us to the store, go to the library, get us home.
And that's...
That used to make me so mad. Oh, that
it's like, just tell me where to turn.
I would get so mad. I would just be like, just freaking tell me where to go. I don't know. Is what I would just start yelling, dude. I mean, I don't know. Like, all right, start driving. See what you see. Dude, I got PTSD.
And with that, Alex Golish now driving the
yeah.
Auburn team.
Which direction will Alex Golish go? There are five different ways for Auburn to go this season, but this website says Auburn's going up because they have the second easiest schedule in the SEC. We're going to have to find a way to ask Jacob Hillman about this because we've done a terrible job of time management, which welcome to OTL, baby. That is, we tell it like it is and hold nothing back. We also can't stick to a schedule, so maybe we should just add that to the intro.
Auburn is 16th or 15th. Out of 16th, Vanderbilt is reported the only one easier. But, again, I think we talked about this with our buddy, our good buddy Tripp, who is with us in the studio.
Good
he said that
Tripp.
The Southern Miss and Samford games play a very big impact in that.
We'll ask Jacob Hillman what he thinks about Auburn and their football schedule in general, whether he agrees or disagrees that it's second easiest in the Southeastern Conference. Plus, we'll talk to him about baseball, SEC, Auburn softball gets started in the SEC tournament tomorrow, and a whole lot more tennis hosting as well.
Ask him about 2016.
We might just have to ask him about 2016. It's good radio, man.
We're we're halfway through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. And we get to the phone lines and welcome in our usual Monday 3:30 guest. He is with the Auburn Sports Network. He is Jacob Hillman. Hillman, we appreciate you joining us, my friend, and want to tee this off with your favorite memory of Auburn football in 2016 for no particular reason other than we've talked about it for the last 30 minutes.
Man, you're making me dig way back in the files, all the way back to some high school days. And I mean, that was a pretty up and down season for Auburn football. But, you know, some of the highs of that Daniel Carlson winning game against LSU and then just the demolition of Arkansas in late October. I mean, I have to go with Eli Stove scoring on that first play against the Razorbacks. I mean, just an incredible start to that game. I remember it being just a beautiful October evening. Like, it could not have been a better outcome for that game, better night for football. Like, that. If you ask me about 2016, other than maybe that wild Clemson game to start the year, that's what I'm thinking of is Eli Stove taking it to the house on the first play against Arkansas.
Yeah, we were talking about the Auburn-LSU game that year where Auburn won because LSU didn't get the snap off in time on a game-winning touchdown, right? That was the 2016 game in Jordan-Hare, right?
Yeah, and I was going to say that was almost botched by the officiating crew in that game, letting it play out and calling it a touchdown. And fortunately, there was enough evidence because also guys were all moving around. No one was set. The ball was snapped before anyone was set. It was just wild. And fortunately, replay was able to overturn that and give Auburn a win in that one.
Yeah, Auburn won that one, thankfully. The one that I remember even more vividly for Auburn LSU was the one 2 years later in 2018. I think the hottest game in the history of games. Yep. I mean, that was, for me personally, that's the hottest game I've ever been a part of.
Is that the Cade York field goal?
It was. It was time expired. Yeah. Auburn was winning almost
Joe
the
Burrow.
Whole time.
That was, Joe Burrow gave the quote about, this place is loud.
Yeah, and the stadium ran out of water. My dad was one of the people who passed out on the concourse outside. He got up and went to the bathroom and just never came back. And it was like, where did he go? And
Well, if I recall correctly, I could be wrong about this. I think that was the game that did change like the policy of you could bring in a sealed water bottle or an empty water bottle and all that stuff. Yeah. Like
that and the giant tubes of all of the water stations.
Yeah, the massive jugs. Yeah.
Yep.
Reminiscing, Hillman. It's talking season, my friend. Well, yeah, I wanted to start with that because, again, we went down that rabbit hole. But there are actual things to talk about that are happening in the year of 2026. And one of those things is Auburn baseball continuing to win series. Their fifth series win in a row. They go to College Station. Had to deal with a little bit of weather, and maybe that was in benefit of Auburn. We'll never know. But Tigers take the first two against Texas A&M. Come up just a bit short in game three, but Auburn wins its fifth series in a row.
Yeah, this has kind of been a trend over the last 5 years for Butch Thompson and company. And some of these seasons where Auburn just gets on fire, they're going to reel off several SEC series wins in a row. Right now, it's the longest streak in the SEC. It happened back in 2023 for the Tigers, and doing it on the road against a Texas A&M team that I called them the hottest team in the nation last week was really impressive, especially to win game one in run rule fashion and then back it up with that second game later that day. Of course, game three, I mean, you're just a couple plays away from it being a sweep. If you're able to hit a little bit earlier in that game or just come through in that ninth inning, who knows what we're talking about at this point right now. But nevertheless, it was just such an impressive performance all around from what I thought about this lineup. The power surge has been consistent over probably the last month or so, maybe less than a month. But, I mean, this team is hitting home runs now. Chase Braylock had five straight games with a home run. That's something that hadn't been done since 1985. And then you look at Andreas Alvarez, who since establishing himself as that game one starter after pitching in the midweek through the start of the season, has been nothing but lights out. 11 strikeouts, which is a career high for him, is just impressive against a Texas A&M team. and lineup that is so good. And obviously the offense helped him out, let him just go out there and throw strikes with how many runs it put up in that game. But nonetheless, him, Marciano, Sanders, and Petrovic have just continued to be stellar against some of the best lineups in the country. I saw some conversations about, oh, well, this is where Auburn's pitching is going to really show what it's made of. And it sure did against this Aggie lineup. And it was good to see and gives you a lot of confidence, really, going forward through the rest of the season and into the postseason.
Yeah, Jacob, how great of a thought is it to be able to say, man, our biggest complaint is the fact that you won a series. You couldn't get the sweep, and the fact that pitching continues to be really the comfort factor of this Auburn team. But you mentioned the way that the Auburn offense has really, really come to life, and whether that's at home at Plainsman Park or whether that's on the road, they continue to match what the other team's kind of persona is. And Texas A&M was known for hitting the long ball. Well, Auburn said, okay, you know what? We can do it as well, and we're going to do it better than you in a whole lot of these games. You feel like this team continues to play its best baseball as the regular season comes down the close, and you feel like that's exactly where you want to be.
Well, and yeah, that's the most important part of it is, all right, you need to be geared up for regional and super regional action, and then hopefully you get a couple of weekend wins there, and you're headed to Omaha for the College World Series, where that's where you really try and make a run. And yeah, the offense coming along, I have to look at guys like Chase Frelick and Ethan Bingaman, because Frelick, obviously, coming into the season, had a lot of high expectation. And again, when you look at the power, it wasn't necessarily there at the very start of the season, but then he hits 5 home runs in 5 straight games. Ethan Bingaman, he's looking like an SEC Freshman of the Year candidate, the way he's swinging the bat. And he's kind of just your ultimate utility guy, where he's been solid at first base, but even if you're throwing someone else out there at first base, you could throw him at third base. Who knows? And at some point in his career, hopefully we see him pitch as well. But he can just do whatever as that utility man, but he's swinging the bat so well. And I just think that all that to say, because you add in the factors of Terrell and Chris Rembert, who hasn't quite been himself since that injury early in the season, all those guys, if they come along, these 1 through 9, you feel like there's not an easy out in it. Brandon McCrane hits his first home run of the season. Those are the kinds of things that really make a pitching staff and the opponents think twice whenever they're going up and down the lineup and scouting it. Like there's nowhere to hide when you're facing this Auburn lineup anymore. And that might not have been the case a month or two ago, and now it isn't. So very excited to see this continue. And again, you're facing the toughest teams in the SEC these next 2 weekends, going to Mississippi State in the toughest environment in college baseball, and then hosting just a powerful, powerful Georgia team to wrap up the regular season.
We're talking with Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network here on ESPN 106.7. And you mentioned the final 2 series, and not just the final 2 series. How about the final 2 midweeks? Huh? Auburn going to Birmingham tomorrow to take on a talented UAB team. Then they go basically straight to Starkville and take on Mississippi State. Then they go take on Jack State next week in the midweek before coming home to host the Georgia Bulldogs. We were asked it in discussing a little bit earlier in our program the magic number of SEC wins, of Auburn needing to be comfortable or confident on selection day for a top 8 seed. Auburn 14-10 in the SEC, 32-14 overall. In your opinion, Hillman, what is that magic number that Auburn needs in the next 6 SEC games and the next 8 games overall?
Yeah, that's interesting, because I think I look back to last year where I don't think anyone expected Auburn to be as highly seeded as it was on selection day, where Auburn ended up being the number 4 overall seed and ended up hosting Coastal Carolina in a super regional at Plainsman Park. And maybe it's a similar deal this year, but I think more eyeballs are on the Tigers at this point in the season and kind of expecting the Tigers to be a top 8 seed. And sitting at 14-10, like you said, it's tough to gauge, because I think with the RPI and everything, Auburn's in a great spot. The second highest RPI right now in the SEC, 4th in the nation. And with these two SEC series coming up, and then obviously the 2 midweeks with, Jacksonville State is high up there in the top 30. And UAB dropped off quite a bit this week, and they were top 35. They're down to 46. So the rest of your season is going to be against top at least 50 RPI teams, where I think that's going to factor in a good bit. But, you know, if you handle those business in those midweeks, then you really just don't need to get swept, I think, against both Mississippi State and Georgia. Georgia's probably more of a, obviously, I would say a winnable series just being at home. But I still think that if you go, I can't do the math right now. My brain's not working there. 4-4, I guess, down the stretch. You're in a solid spot. You might need some help in the SEC tournament to secure that top 8 seed after 4-4. But I really think that winning that series in College Station puts Auburn in a really solid spot going into the NCAA tournament when we get to that point. Now, of course, you got to handle business these next 2 weeks, but I don't think it's as tall of a task as it was prior to Texas A&M.
Well, Jacob, you mentioned the teams on the diamond working towards the postseason. Softball, the tournament starts tomorrow. Auburn, game one, relatively early on, possibly getting word of it getting moved up. But Auburn and Missouri, Tuesday, May 5th. Your thoughts on what the Malvos are trying to do, a little bit of a frustrating end to the regular season, but what this Auburn team has in front of them and what they could possibly do trying to make a little bit of noise in the SEC softball tournament.
Yeah, they're going to have to make a little bit of a run here whenever we get it to Lexington, whenever that tournament does start. And against the team that Auburn has played before, against Missouri, got swept by the Tigers back in March, but a series where things got away early in those ball games. And if I recall correctly, I think Auburn fought back very well in those games as well. And it's going to be key just to make the NCAA tournament, to make it, to win several games here in Lexington. Obviously, you got to be above 500 to make the NCAA tournament. So being two games below, you're going to have to win at least three games. And that's going to be a tall task in the SEC. But in tournament play, you never know what can happen. And if you can get hot at the right time, that's going to be the key. I just think that this offense needs to find a little bit more consistency, because the pitching has its bright spots. And that's where those big innings that sometimes they give up. I go back to that Missouri series when I think Auburn gave up five spot in the first inning in one of those games. Those are the kinds of things that need to be avoided. And Auburn has fought hard against some good teams over the past month or so. And Baton Rouge might not have been the best example of that. But, I mean, even like the Alabama and the Florida series, Auburn was in there for most of those ball games. And they're going to have to find a way to come through and get a win in Lexington this week.
And then, of course, other big things going on. Tennis has been overly successful and going to have some postseason tennis here on the Plains. Hillman, if you would, give people insights on that, plus the other sports going on around Auburn Athletics right now.
Yeah. Jordan Szabo and the women's tennis team are super regional bound. The Sweet 16 is going to be in Auburn, and that's a huge deal for this tennis program. Being the number 2 overall seed, that's the highest seeding in program history. A lot of program best first set this year under Coach Szabo and the rest of this team. So it's going to be critical for the Auburn family to show up this weekend to support them. There's not a lot of events going on this week. School is out of session. Baseball and softball will both be on the road. So the Tigers host Duke, the 15th seed, at the Yarbrough Tennis Center on Friday at 5:00. That's free to attend. Hopefully the weather is beautiful like it was this past weekend for a period of time, and it can be a great atmosphere. I think there was well over 400 people at the Yarbrough Tennis Center this past weekend, which that provides a heck of an atmosphere. If you've not been out there to take in a match, it's really cool. You're right on top of the action. You can see everything going on at the same time, and you can really make a difference. So Friday, 5:00, Yarbrough Tennis Center, Auburn Duke for a chance to go to the Elite Eight and the NCAA championship on the line. So make sure you make your plans to be out there after they just kind of cruise through regional action, taking down Brown and then shutting out number 29 Miami. So looking forward to what Jordan Szabo and this crew have to do this weekend.
Well, there's a lot going on as the spring sports roll right along, and Jacob Hillman and everybody at the Auburn Sports Network will keep you updated the best they can, including baseball tomorrow in Birmingham. I believe Brad is going to be on the call tomorrow, and then in Mississippi State, or in Starkville against Mississippi State. That's a Thursday, Friday, Saturday series, Hillman. So tell the people what they need to know in terms of the broadcast schedule for the next week.
Yeah, it's Thursday, Friday, Saturday series, the next two weekends for Auburn baseball, with this weekend just shaking out that way, and then next weekend being the season finale, getting ready to go to Hoover. But looking ahead to tomorrow night, Auburn at UAB at Regents Field, 5:45 airtime, 6 o'clock first pitch on Wings 94.3 FM. Brad Wall has the call. And then this weekend, it'll be a huge series in Starkville at Duty Noble Field starting on Thursday. 7 o'clock first pitch, 6:45 airtime on Wings 94.3 FM. Friday first pitch is at 7:30, and Saturday is at 3 o'clock. All of that coverage on Wings 94.3 FM with Voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham and Brad Law on the call. And then SEC tournament action for Auburn softball begins tomorrow at noon on Weagle 91.1 FM and the Auburn Tigers app. Britt Bowen has your coverage against Missouri beginning at 11:45 a.m. And then, as I mentioned, Auburn women's tennis, number two in the nation, hosting 15th seeded Duke Friday at 5 o'clock at the Yarborough Tennis Center. And then here's another big one. Talking Tigers podcast, Brett Hobart, Jacob Jordan join Andy Burcham exclusively on War Eagle Plus to talk about the Jordan Hare North project and everything that's to come with that. A lot of it's a really great deep dive into how this is going to connect Jordan Hare Stadium to the Auburn University campus. So really excited for that project to get going. And Brett Hobart and Jacob Jordan bring great details with Andy on that podcast.
Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network, my man, we appreciate you as always taking the time to inform us, inform our listeners of everything going on around Auburn Athletics. We will do it again next week. But until then, enjoy your week.
I will. I appreciate it, guys. War Eagle.
Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network, again with us every Monday, has been for a long, long time here on ESPN 106.7. We will take a break, come back, and wrap up the Monday edition of On the Line right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Been a great show today, man. We've talked a ton. Talked Auburn baseball, beating Texas A&M. We talked some Auburn football in terms of returning production. We started talking some of the schedule. Maybe that gets bumped to tomorrow or Wednesday or Thursday. We also went down memory lane to 2016 for literally no reason at all. And then we talked to our guy, Jacob Hillman, of the Auburn Sports Network. Just got off the phone with him. And so a great show. If you missed any of it, be sure to go back and check it out on our station website at ESPNAU.com.
Go ahead and say it. It'll make you happy.
Yeah, Hillman sent me, he literally just sent me a link right when we got off the phone, and he was like, well, this would have been fun to talk about. It broke while we were on the phone with him. Kendall Rogers of D1 Baseball is reporting that the NCAA Baseball Rules Committee has approved the SEC's proposal to use experimental ABS challenges, automated balls and strikes, in the upcoming conference tournament. Coaches will have 3 specific ABS challenges per game. Your thoughts quickly.
Says he also followed it up by laying out the exact rules. One of them, I guess the distinction from his original tweet saying that coaches can challenge only on-field players in 3 specific positions. Obviously, the pitcher, the catcher, and the current batter can tap their head. Very similar to in the MLB. If you win the challenge, you get a bonus challenge in the extra innings. If you don't have any left, only a pitcher, a catcher, and a hitter can use it. It has to be within 2 to 3 seconds. You've seen a couple of those where they've waited a little bit longer. You had one yesterday of Jonah Heim for the Braves, went to go retrieve a ball that went off his glove, picked it up and tapped his head, and the umpire said he took too long. And so a little bit of gray area on that side of things. I don't mind it because you've seen strike calls that are at the ankles. You go ask the Aggie fan base, they'll be happy to tell you all about that.
Yeah.
Not the 1-2 that was down Broadway. But I like the idea. I don't love the idea if it's starting this season. in the middle of just what is going to be a very fun SEC tournament. I feel like this is something that needs to be started or kicked off at the start of the year.
I agree with that. I think it's tough to do it in the conference tournament, especially in the NCAA tournament. I doubt they will adopt it then, but you know me. I love that it's here. I love that it's starting to find its way into the big boy leagues of baseball, and I think it's good for the sport overall. So more on that tomorrow when we talk about Auburn baseball and SEC baseball. That will be a lot of our show tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.